Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the Christmas episode. My name is David Reed. And over there, look, it's Marek Larwood having a jolly Christmas time.
Merry Christmas to you, one and all, the children, there are no children listening. Merry Christmas to the film lovers who listen to this podcast from Iceland, Guatemala, New Zealand, Spain, from all over the world.
You've named only Christian countries, that's good.
Okay,
for Christmas time.
Non-Christian countries. Australia.
Scotland.
And of course, Ireland. Right, well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And to, or they should say Happy Holidays now. That's what they make you say, isn't it? All these bloody things.
Christmas time is, of course, about films.
Yes, it's a time where you want to find an excuse to not talk to your family members.
The spirit of the season has forced you to be in the same house as your family, which you try to avoid the rest of the year. So, as a gift to you, so you don't have to talk to them, films are on telly.
Yeah.
And it's constant films on telly.
Well, the big choices are, can you go to,
We've got the Radio Times with us.
Every Christmas you have to have the Radio Times Christmas edition, which is like opening Christmas present. The key one is, what is the film that BBC and ITV have chosen for that post-Christmas dinner, lunchtime, the one that appeals to the whole family?
What time do you call that? Because you see, my family has Christmas dinner in the evening. Do you have it at lunch?
Yeah. After the Queen's speech at 3 o'clock, there's always a film.
3 o'clock. Okay, 3:20 on ITV.
It's normally like Monsters, Inc. or something.
Tangled.
Yeah.
Tangled. Excellent choice. Well, let's have a look. This is in the films of the day. 4:35 on Channel 4, Muppet Christmas Carol.
But what's the BBC one?
BBC doesn't have a What's Best
Go
on.
Go to the day.
Yeah, let's go to the day. Come on.
This is the first thing I do is see what the Christmas film is on the day.
Monday on Freeview. Where's the date on it? Oh, there we go.
It'll be a Pixar thing, I bet.
Yeah? Okay, what's your bet?
Something to do with...
Come on. If you had to put money on it...
It's got to be some new, recent kids film. It better not be Hotel Transylvania, because that's the worst. I'm going to have to watch this, that's the thing.
You're going to have to. Is your family the kind that has to sit down and watch...
Well, I don't want to speak to anyone.
So, oh no, you're not going to be disappointed. BBC One,
yeah.
Toy Story 3.
It always is Toy Story.
Toy Story 3. And ITV, Tangled, Channel 4, Muppet Christmas Carol. On Channel 5, for people who don't want a kid's
film. They always do that, some violence or something, isn't it?
Casablanca.
Of course.
Old classic.
Playing it safe. Now, David, what are your favourite Christmas films, please?
Toy Story 3, Tangled, Muppet's Christmas Carol and Casablanca.
Well, someone's going to have this.
Coincidentally.
Have to get their Sky Plus working.
It's going
to
be a nightmare. Christmas films. Now, what do you class as Christmas films? There are many films that are set at Christmas.
Well, I mean, one you could say is Gremlins is a Christmas horror film.
Definitely. Very Christmassy.
That is, but it can't just be where Christmas is passing.
What, it snows in the final shot as they cut to credits, basically.
Yeah.
Well, for out and out Christmas films, Elf, I love Will Ferrell.
Mm-hmm.
I love Santa Claus the movie, the one with Dudley Moore. And John Lithgow.
It was a real disappointment when it came, wasn't it?
Apparently so, but I watched it as a kid over and over again. I loved it. I have also met the reindeer from that now, so that probably helps.
How did you know?
because a friend of mine is a reindeer herder, and they basically in Scotland, and they basically hire out all the reindeer for these.
How things. Long does a reindeer live?
Indefinitely. They just get bigger and bigger, like crocodiles.
The problem is, when you said I believed your story, and now you're the second half of it, it's fourth.
Okay. No, I don't know is the answer. It may not have been the reindeer, but it's certainly their family. It was one herd.
You can't say I've met a reindeer. It's like me going to say I met a horse the other day. It was in Black Beauty.
Yeah. No, it's the same family. It's like I've definitely met at least a niece of the reindeers in Santa Claus, the movie.
This is a rubbish story.
Well, it wasn't. Didn't start as a story.
What about a more obscure film that you like for Christmas?
Lethal Weapon, that's a Christmas film. Die Hard, obviously. You know what? I have never seen It's a Wonderful Life.
What?
I know, it's insane. I've never seen It's a Wonderful Life.
Why not?
I don't know. I've just, it's never been on when I've been watching telly.
Is the go-to Christmas
film?
Yeah,
exactly.
I don't think it's that Christmassy.
It's quite depressing, isn't it, until the end?
Yeah.
It's quite a dark film, from what I've read.
Yeah, it's in black and white.
So 50% of it is dark.
Yeah, naturally. And it was there isn't actually on a film, it's just on a black glass and all the characters are animated in snow.
Oh, wow. Must have taken a while.
This podcast is just full of lies. One of my favourite Christmas films is one my dad got out from the video shop, i.e. the spa, which is where you get the videos when I was 8 years old, called A Christmas Story. Have you seen that?
No. What is it?
It came out in 1983, and it's based in about the 1950s. It's about a boy, I think it's quite big in America, this film, as a Christmas film, but it's not really so well known over here. So to our American listeners, you probably know, you all know what I'm talking about. It's this little boy who wants a BB gun for Christmas, and it's narrated by him as a grown-up, as an adult, telling him to, and it's him going to school and getting bullied.
Like the Wonder Years.
Now, I think this is, when we talk about films being precursors to other things,
yeah.
It is exactly like that. It's like a funnier version, like the best bits of the Wonder Years.
Is it before the Wonder Years?
Yeah, 1983.
Okay.
And the kid's got these sort of glasses, and it's about him getting told off at school and getting bullied and not getting the marks he needs. It is very, you know, it's a typical sort of American family where the dad's just sort of pissed off with work, and the guy who plays Ralph is Peter Billingsley, plays Ralphie. I don't really want to know any of these people. It is the most Christmassy film. Apparently it's like semi-autobiographical story it's based on. If you want to see a Christmas film that is a bit different, go check out A Christmas Story.
Another one I was pleasantly surprised by was Bad Santa. Have you seen
that? That's good as well, yeah.
It is good, but it's not, from the trailer I was expecting it just to be a sort of pathetic gross out thing where, you know, with dwarf humour and stuff, but it's not. It's got proper heart to it as well as being very funny.
Yeah.
I thought that was excellent.
Well, that's our Christmas films. We're going to talk about something else now.
Oh, is that it? There's quite a few good things on, I would have thought.
Over what would you pick
Indiana out? Jones is always on, and it's not particularly Christmassy, I don't think. It's all set in sand.
I think there's a thing about Christmas films. They're not actually Christmas films. They're just successful films that have been on a lot. So you have that nostalgia. Because Christmas is an odd day.
Yeah. They're family films, really, aren't they? They're ones that sort of anyone can watch.
I think because Christmas has the same sort of structure that gets repeated year after year after year after year. So you can't really tell how old you are because the day is pretty much exactly the same until you move house or someone dies and it changes. And that's not very nice. But Christmas can stay the same.
It's your philosophy on life.
Yeah, Christmas is pretty much the same for year after year after year. And then suddenly babies appear and it changes a bit again. But that's why you associate, you like the old films because they're just
nostalgic.
Well, they're just pillars in the film world. I don't even, do you know what? I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, I'm glad that on Christmas Day, Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, is on again.
You're joking.
No, it's... Why? Like, they've not even rated it well in this. Everyone knows they're terrible. Don't repeat them just because they're George Lucas films. They're terrible films. They don't belong on this list with Toy Story and Casablanca. They don't belong on this list.
They won't be there for very long.
I think they will, you know.
The TV channels have probably bought the rights to about 10 showings. They're trying to get rid of it at Christmas.
ITV's still showing back-to-back carry-on films, as it should, every single year. Chalet Girl followed by Iron Man. That's a good double bill.
Well, tell us what. Write you right in and tell us what you're going to watch this Christmas, and then we'll probably ignore it. Do you know we've got an email though talking about something?
Yes. Are you all right?
When I a couple of weeks ago, I talked about how it was just Chris Webb, our regular listener, writing in, and no one else wrote in. So we've had a few emails. Thank you very much for writing in. Lee Wood has written in. Do you know what he's got to say?
I don't. Why don't you tell me?
Hi, guys. Just to say, I'm listening. Quick question to ask. I'm not very good at reading lately. Quick question to ask if you've ever seen Honest Trailers on YouTube. I find them hilarious, especially the Pacific Rim. I think he means Pacific Rim.
No, Pacific Rim is the porn version.
Oh, is it? Okay. And Man of Steel ones. Also, have you seen your Captain America trailer? I'm really looking forward to it now. But do you think the trailers are now spoiling films? There seems to be 10 different trailers for one film nowadays, which can really show off too much of the film. Sent from my iPhone, Lee Wood.
God, they're such show-offs, our listeners.
There's two questions there.
Two questions. Well, which one first? Let's go with the last one first. Are trailers spoiling films? They always have done. You know, with the few exceptions of things like Trainspotting, where they filmed a specific, almost short film to not give anything away. And even that one had a montage of shots from the film afterwards, with Born Slippy over the top. It's inevitable. You've got to sell your film or you won't get to make more films. But you have to spoil the surprise by doing so.
I don't think the studios care about it. All they care is about selling... They've made the film, they don't care if it spoils the film, they just want you to go and see it, that's all.
Yes, and I think I've said it before, it's particularly villainous for comedies, I think, because when they give away the best lines, and they will be best lines from... all the way through the film, it means that every time that line comes out, it's a momentum killer in the audience, I think, because you've heard that one before. And it's a real shame. I think they should shoot... Well, Anchorman 2's been doing very well, actually, trailer-wise, in showing specially recorded stuff, by and large. I think that's the way to go. If, you know, I would like to believe that if I had any power over these things, I'd want to actually budget for shooting a trailer. Shoot something that's in the spirit of it, and even could actually throw a curveball to the audience so they're expecting one thing and something else happens. Use it as part of your storytelling.
Occasionally, you are surprised by films that are better than the trailers.
Yes.
Last week I spoke about Saving Mr. Banks. That was one where the film is much better than the trailer. We watched the Captain America trailer after Lee Wood brought up.
Yeah.
It's essentially just a series of action sequences.
It's another superhero film, The Winter Soldier. This is the second of the Captain America films. It's interesting that a film as mainstream as that seems to be going down the lines of America shouldn't really just attack other countries, should it? I mean, they seem to be on a turning point culturally.
I have to disagree with you.
Really?
Because I think nothing about that film is interesting. I'm not going to watch it.
No, I was just saying it's possibly an interesting point in America's history where they're starting to turn a corner in believing, you know.
Okay, that isn't. Maybe it isn't.
You know, I thought, you know.
But I don't want
to. You don't want to talk about superhero films, that's why. No, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
And the other question was, have we seen Honest Trailers? I think someone, Mark Bell, posted a on our Facebook page, which is. Facebook facebook.com/filmfandango.
facebook.com/filmfandango.
Where I think there might be a link to the Man of Steel one on there. If not, we'll put it on there. It's very good, the Honest Trailers.
They are good. They're excellent. They're excellent. And the overdub ones as well, if anyone wants to track those down. I forget what they're called. But where they've muted the soundtrack of movies and then overdubbed what it looks like the mouths are saying.
Oh, really?
And they're weirdly genius, those ones, especially the Twilight ones.
Back to the previous thing about yes. Trailers boarding films. I don't know if this was a trailer on your when you went to cinema, but the other recently to see a film.
Yeah.
Have you a really odd trailer for The Secret Life of Walter Mitty?
Yes, I see.
Where that. Ben Stiller is almost a charity appeal. It is incredible. I was like, what? What is happening here? He's reading an auto cue because you can see his eyes moving. And he's talking to you as if you're sitting. So he's, you know, like
oh, I've not seen that trailer.
It's incredible. He's saying, "Hi, my name is Ben Stiller." It was not even. It was sort of badly written by some PR person. Hey, I've got a film coming out which I really love. I'm really proud of, and I want you to come and see. But what?
He's begging.
It, almost like a begging.
He's begging us to see his film. And we then, know he's associated with it. He's in the poster.
So it was odd.
That is very strange.
And then they showed a trailer which was 5 minutes and gave away the whole film.
Wow, that is bizarre.
It was bizarre. I thought, is this what's? I thought, what's happened to the bloody world? And then,
where Ben Stiller's talking directly to me. What does he want?
Unless it was a dream.
Were you asleep?
No.
Have you drunk too much drink?
No, I needed to go to the toilet so badly.
You passed out.
I was hallucinating.
A form of sort of bladder cataplexy.
I had hallucinated. Ben Stiller begging me to go and see Walter Mitty.
I think you owe someone an apology.
There's some more letters as well.
Okay.
If you're listening, Ben, no, you're not. But if you are, then well done. Okay. Do you know what? Someone else has written in.
Do you want to read it? Who is it?
Justin King.
Justin King. In Ipswich. Where's Ipswich?
Oh, can I read Ipswich?
Yeah, I don't know an Ipswich
accent. I can do the Norfolk accent.
Oh, go on then. He looks like a charmer, doesn't he?
Jerry Merrick and David. Last week I went to Cineworld in Ipswich to watch the new digital restoration of Gone with the Wind. And I absolutely loved it. The screen was almost full. And I think a lot of people like me enjoy getting to see a classic on the big screen for the first time. So my question to you is, have you ever gone to the cinema to see an older film? And if you haven't, which classic would you choose if you could watch anything? I would put forward Casablanca and Some Like It Hot as two more I'd love to see. All the best, Jane Ipswich.
Well, of course I've been to see older films at the cinema. I'm trying to rack my brains for particularly good ones now.
I would like recent... My favourite ones I'd go and see would probably be... I think sci-fi always lends itself there for the cinema, so I think I said before I'd love to see 2001 on the big screen, which I haven't seen.
I saw 2001 with a live orchestra. It was amazing.
Yeah, I'd like to do it. I wish you'd invited me.
Sorry.
E.T. I'd also I think would be really good on the big screen as well.
I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, which was awesome, because mm-hmm. I'd only ever seen that on TV. And I'm trying to remember its exact name because I'm afraid I'll get it wrong. But the Rise and Fall of Colonel Blimp, I think it's called, which I saw on the big screen, and I'd not heard of it before when I went to see it, and it is fantastic.
Also, I think some black and white ones that would be good. The Third Man, I think, would be interesting to see how that holds up, and Double Indemnity, which is my favourite film noirs. I'd like to see that. Maybe I could make a day of it.
But, you know, the BFI and stuff do these things, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yes, they do.
Yes, they do. The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp. Sorry, I've managed to look it up now. The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp. But that's a fantastic film if anyone tries to track it down. Quite long, but brilliant.
I've never heard of it.
It's a fantastic film about... Colonel Blimp was a sort of caricature figure of the aristocratic colonel from the Second World War who's sort of fat from, you know, over consuming fine wines and food.
Swan.
And big handlebar moustache and just kind of a bit useless and sending...
I'm thinking of Stephen Fry and Blackadder.
Yeah, sending Tommies off to their death. That's exactly it. The sort of Melchior figure. And this is... It starts with him being insulted by a young officer for being this waste of space when, you know, there's a water fight. And he screams in the man's face, "You don't know anything about me. You don't know what I've been through. You don't know who I am." And then there's this fantastic bit where he goes swimming as Colonel Blimp, the big fat guy, goes swimming, and he exits frame, and then he comes back, all one shot, back in the day before camera trickery, and it's the same actor and he's now a young man. And somehow he's shed all the prosthetics and everything off camera, and he comes back on. And you're now back at the beginning of his life in the army, and you see it up to that point again. And it's wonderful.
I should watch it just for that.
Yeah. It's sort of famous for that shot as well, you know, of being a bit of kind of magical.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go for another letter.
All right. What have you got?
I think it's time for you to read one out.
All right. Where are they from?
He says Chichester.
Where's that?
Oh, he's got a request there. I didn't say.
Appalling accents.
We'll see about that.
Where's Chichester?
It's near
Germany.
Yeah.
Dear David, Merrick, Buddy, and the other listeners out there, Chris Webb, I was listening to your wonderful show about film and found it. Which actor or actress you thought had gone from incredible highs to rock bottom? I confess to being a Bruce Willis fan and find Die Hard and Sixth Sense are fantastic. But did you see the last Die Hard film? Oh, and Robert De Niro. He has countless movies to his name that ensure he should never have to work again, and he is currently turning out dross like The Family. Is there anyone you can think of who has soared higher and then fallen further, or conversely, started off making dire films and then starred in something that blew your mind? Yours, Paul, from Chichester near Munich.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there with Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro, hands down, must be the winner of that award for just cashing in his legacy year after year after year. He isn't even doing anything good anymore. Stardust is the last thing I think was good he was in that I can remember.
I was watching film 2013 or 2013 when they called it.
Yeah.
And the reviewer on there, who I quite like, can't remember his name, I'm really bad with names, he said that people now, the youth now, watching Robert De Niro would think that he's just plays this hammy sort of dad.
They'll think of him as a guy from Meet the Parents. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
It's incredible how he's prepared to just...
Whereas Al Pacino, I think, still picks his roles.
Yeah.
A bit more, you know.
The other way round...
starts off in crap and becomes excellent.
The guy from Neighbours, a.k.a...
Which one?
From
Russell Crowe or Guy Pearce?
Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce, yeah.
Starting off in Neighbours and then going on to make Memento and...
Yeah.
All sorts.
Yeah, he's then gone on to do Prometheus and stuff. But, yeah, you know, a couple of blips.
Well, he was in LA Confidential as well.
Yeah, brilliant in that.
Also in Goodfellas, thingy, what's his name? Acne Face.
Ray Liotta.
Yeah, he was a quite promising Goodfellas.
Yeah,
and then he just tends to play a series of sort of slightly bad villains and
sort
things.
Almost comedy uncles, like evil comedy uncles.
Yeah,
like...
I can't even remember what. There's so many and nondescript, and he just looks as though. I can't really say this. I mean, using it to fund some sort of drink problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Paul Hogan. I bloody love the Crocodile Dundee films. Yeah,
great. Even Crocodile Dundee 2 is great.
Yeah, and then he did Lost in LA or whatever, and then did Flipper, and then sort of disappeared forever. It's a very quick graph, but Flipper is definitely beneath Crocodile Dundee. It's probably not a great example. M. Night Shyamalan is as a director rather than a star, started high and has been plummeting ever since.
Just it's sad, isn't it, when they make it look like a fluke. Yeah. On this subject, I recently saw Only God Forgives.
Right.
Which is the director of Drive.
Yes.
Made this, and it's almost like a...
Ryan Gosling again, isn't it?
It's got Ryan Gosling in it. The music's by a bloke called Cliff Martinez, who is brilliant. He makes the music to Drive, I think, which is so symbolic of it, the right word. It's different director of photography, but the look is the same.
Okay.
Look is the same. But
yeah, the trailer made it look like it was the same DOP, because it is very similar, sort of... very black blacks, but then sort of flashes of colour.
And they sort of cut that pinky, sort of reddy hue that Drive had. That's a neon.
It's almost that street light.
Yeah,
look,
that neon thing.
Yeah.
Look. Sorry, I'm just typing in to make sure I've got his name. And guess who else do you get for any foreign film?
Any foreign film?
Well, it's not a foreign film. It's set in...
Kristen Scott Thomas.
Yeah, of course. She plays the moment. Anything set outside in Europe.
Yeah.
And you've got a lady in it. You pick Christian Scott Thomas.
It's great.
So the director is Nicholas Winding Refn. I can't say his name. R-E-F-N.
Danish bloke.
Drive was one of my favourite films.
I remember.
I absolutely loved it. I hadn't seen anything like it. And it really made you want to go out and buy a scorpion jacket and kill someone.
With a hammer.
Yeah, or just my fist, you know, that sort of thing. And I love this film. Then I saw a Q&A with the director, Nicholas Winding Refn. I shouldn't be nasty to people because I realise how difficult their job is, but he was the most pretentious person and the most annoying. Every cliche you have about film director being snobby and up his own arse. If you watch the DVD extras of the interview with him on Drive, it's impossible not to hate him. I mean, he can come after me and beat me up, but I think he's a dick.
And does this come across in his latest film?
The Drive, I read the book, which is based, was a short story by James Salis.
Right.
And so it's based on that, and he had another script writer in. He wrote the script to Only God Forgives. And this is interesting, sort of seeing that almost like M. Night Shyamalan's sort of fall from grace. It looks amazing. It's a bit like of a Kubrick ripoff. Sometimes it's a bit too, you know, in The Shining, some of Kubrick's films, everything's symmetrical and it's got that beautiful, everything's staged and
everything's a bit clinical and
every shot is set up. The acting, you know, you've got Ryan Gosling, you've got Christian Scott Thomas, great actors. The script is one of the worst scripts. I cannot believe he wrote and directed it, and that's the only reason it got through. It's embarrassing. It's like a teenager would write the script. So you've got these... Christian Scott Thomas saying these lines, which are so clunky and so trying to be hard man like. I think English might be his first language. You can really tell. It's odd. And I thought this film is terrible. I couldn't work out whether it was because I loved Drive so much and I was hearing the music to Drive.
Yeah.
And I was seeing the images to Drive.
It was like teenagers were recreating Drive for you.
Yeah.
Because they knew how you loved it so much.
Once I got into it, I preferred it. I preferred it a lot more. I mean, once you get into you get to have to sort of realise it's not a normal narrative of film. A lot of it's visual. There's very little script.
Right.
And it's just music by Cliff Martinez playing and people wandering around for no reason, looking to distance and just doing odd things in Bangkok. I thought the director was an idiot for just get someone in and say, can you read through that? Read through that script and check that's all right. Just one person. Just get one person to read through that script.
Is he a victim of his own success?
I think it was, having seen him influence my viewing of the film.
Yeah.
Because I saw him interview and I thought, you are pretentious. And once you see him talking... And he's the least charismatic man I've ever met or seen in an interview in my life, then it put me off the film.
Wow.
It's a really violent film, so he finds out this, I'm definitely going to get killed. If I get killed by some guy from a Bangkok police officer with a samurai sword.
Yeah, I'll know who did it.
We have a rough idea.
It was Nicholas Winding Refn. I mean, you haven't even told me his real name.
Or a listener to the show.
Yeah.
Or Christopher. Our second choice would be regular listener Christopher Webb.
Oh, you're so afraid of Christopher Webb.
He stopped writing in.
Ah. How many Marricks would you give it?
Only God Forgives?
Yeah. Not Christopher Webb's Murder Review.
I'd give it 4. Ooh. Purely on the basis of the music and the way it looked.
Okay. Okay.
Ryan Gosling playing the same character.
Yeah.
And just looking. It's ruined Drive a little bit. Don't watch this film be like Drive.
It's almost like
he does that look. You know the looks he does in Drive, where you sort of give him dialogue. And he's just looking without any real character. There's no.
You've seen behind the curtain of Ryan Gosling a bit.
Yes. There's no mystery. There's just nothing.
Well, that you know, an actor who's doing very very little needs massive support from the cinematographer and the soundtrack and the director and the script and everything. You know.
Is there anything else you've seen this?
Well, I wanted to bring up actually that things you'd recommended and I hadn't seen on previous episodes, I've sort of been having a bit of a catch up. So I saw Blackfish,
yes,
which we talked about very briefly, which is fantastic.
I didn't recommend it, did I?
Yeah, I think so. I have some inkling it was mentioned. Anyway, if we haven't,
I haven't seen it.
I recommend you track it down. It's about. It's about orcas in SeaWorld and how their turbulent history and how it's been hushed up that they've killed 3 people. But it's amazing.
And it's actually, like Rust and Bone, the real story.
It's exactly like Rust and Bone. I was thinking that when I watched it. But only the keeper doesn't survive. It's sort of mind-blowing a bit. Bit too one-sided. I know even if the truth is one-sided, the polemic nature of it doesn't quite sit easy with you at the end, where you feel like you might be being manipulated.
Okay.
But it is wonderful to see. And Willie Nelson and some other musicians, since seeing the film, have cancelled their gigs at SeaWorld. So it is
just
having an effect.
Get the whales to do the music themselves.
I love Enya.
What is whale song?
It's probably really relaxing for our listeners.
Let's just have a 10 seconds of whale song, which you can cut out of the podcast and put it on repeat. Ready?
Yeah.
Happy Christmas.
The other one I tracked down was I want to say batteries not included.
It's safety not guaranteed.
Safety not guaranteed. Yes, with Aubrey Plaza and also the guy who plays Nick in New Girl, whose name I don't know, but he's the guy in it.
Yeah.
It was great. Really good film.
A few people have tweeted in saying they'd like that, so I think it's a good low budget film.
Yeah, lovely, lovely sort of gentle film that's well done, and then you know it's very sweet. It's very sweet. The guy actually who is the one who believes in time travel and really odd performance because it
Mark Duplass or something.
Yeah, what's he done? Do you know?
He has done a few films.
Okay, good on him. Good on him. But no, it's a weirdly truthful performance for what could be just an out and out comedy role.
That's why it worked. I think I said a couple of weeks ago that it was a tone. They nailed the tone, and everyone's playing it like they believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
Another comedy I saw recently is The Heat with Sandra Bullock and
Melissa McCarthy.
Yes.
Yes. How is it?
Well, I didn't go and watch cinema because I thought, it's going to be awful.
Terrible poster. There was a whole fracas online about how they'd photoshopped Melissa McCarthy's face to be totally unrecognisable.
I think she's a very attractive woman.
Really?
Yeah, I think she really is. And she called herself in the thing, she talks about being fat, she's this fat, but her face, I can watch her face all day.
Yeah. Have you seen the poster?
Yes. Yeah.
Incredible.
I just saw it on IMDb.
Keep telling. Tell the audience what the plot is.
It's just a cop buddy movie. Sandra Bullock's the prim, sort of uptight police detective, and she has to work with Melissa McCarthy, who's sort of Irish descent, rough and ready cop. Now, here's my thing. I've talked about films, actors that should be up for Oscars this year. I think Melissa McCarthy's performance is Oscar-worthy in this.
Really?
I think
in
she
a comedy?
Is brilliant. She's. I could watch her all day. The first 2 minutes was just Sandra Bullock, and I thought, oh no, this film is going to be terrible. This is Melissa McCarthy just smashing out of the park in a comedy performance. She is so watchable. Her face is brilliant. She brings comedy to things in most other hands would not be funny, and she made me laugh out loud, and I really enjoyed it. And it was, I give it 7 Mareks, and it was a good fun thing you want to watch over Christmas. And it's good to see two women given proper comedy roles,
yeah,
and nailing it, like sort of Bridesmaids.
Well, I'll try and track it down then, because I liked Sandra Bullock in Miss Congeniality as well. Yeah. I thought she was funny, and she's not often given a, you know, often when you've got an A-lister, they for some reason the very fact they're in it guarantees it won't be funny, because it's going to be a big enough project for enough people to interfere, and comedy is a fragile thing.
Yeah.
So then you get things like The Proposal or any of this guff, which is just like just people prattling around, and it's sort of harmless but not funny. So
I think Melissa McCarthy,
I'm encouraged to hear it.
She's a superstar,
good.
And she should be given, well, she'll get more stuff, but I thought,
well, she's in one of the biggest sitcoms in America at the moment, so
okay.
Mike and Molly, that's where she came from
oh,
TV.
Okay.
I think it's sort of third only to 2.5 Men and the Big Bang Theory, Mike and Molly.
I think she's amazing, and I've seen some great this year to bang, I think brilliant female performances. To talk about Saving Mr. Banks, Emma Thompson in that, the Adele Extropolopoulos from Blue is the Warmest
yep.
Colour, and Miss McCarthy in this, and Kate Blanchett in Blue, in the sort of
Blue Jasmine,
yeah,
yeah,
all brilliant. And I've only seen Tom Hanks do anything that's close to those acting performances of the year, I think.
Yeah. Well,
we'll find it. We'll talk about that. Are we going to do a review in not next podcast, but the one after?
2 weeks' time, when it is the new year, we will do our rundown of the best
when
things.
When all the films have been out, and
yeah.
we've watched all the films in December.
Give them all a chance, because we don't want to be unfair to them. We don't want them getting on the phone or emailing us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, or going on our Facebook wall /filmfandango, or tweeting us @filmfandango and saying, here, you didn't give Anchorman 2 a fair shot, because you did your rundown of the year before it even came out.
Yeah, we don't want them bribing us by donating to help fund the podcast.
No, that is the last thing we want to have to deal with, all of that politics, by going to filmfandango.co.uk and giving us money.
All of which goes to save children.
And Wales.
Who've grown up into save children who've grown up into us.
That's right. Save children who've grown up into Marek or I. Either
yeah.
of those categories.
Yeah.
And we promise none of your donations will be invested into BAE Systems.
Yeah.
It's topical for a week ago.
That was Comic Relief basically buying guns with
yeah.
money.
With money. Well,
that turkey must be almost be cooked by now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it's in 5 days' time, but yeah. I'm cooking it early. We're
put
just going to have cold meat sandwiches for Christmas.
Put it on really low.
Really low for 5 days.
Well, this turkey's huge, isn't it? It's enough to feed 5,000 people.
It's an enormous turkey. Well, have a Merry Christmas, everybody. Or if you're if you don't celebrate that sort of thing, have a rotten week.
Yeah,
and,
you non-believers.
Heathen. And we'll be back next week with more films.
It will still be Christmas.
It will still be Christmas. Well, sort of. It won't be New Year yet. Keep watching the films.
Keep watching the films. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.